Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. This is Crystalline Larson with Blog Talk Radio. Is anyone there? Andre isn't yet with us. Hold on a moment. Hello, Andre, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, great. Jennifer hasn't called in yet.
Hello, Jennifer, are you there? Hello, Jennifer, are you there?
I am. You can't hear me?
Okay, great.
I can now.
Okay.
I am trying to start the song. Andre, do you know how to do it? I'm going to just hit this button.
You don't need to fear the shadows you've been chasing.
Her music, if you want, you can go to francyl.com. That's francyl.com, and she's got CDs available and all kinds of stuff. So, this morning on The Cosmic Citizen, we are speaking with Jennifer Siegel. Jennifer Siegel has, for at least 18 years, conducted a study group at her home for young people and children. And we're going to talk about how to introduce the Arantia book to children. Jennifer, welcome to The Cosmic Citizen.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Jennifer, I guess...
Hi, Jennifer.
Good morning, Crystalline.
Crystalline, you know...
Normally,
I usually ask the opening question of the guest, but you know what? I was racking my brain trying to think of an opening question, and I can't think of one. So, Crystalline, I'm going to defer this to you. By the way... Just so people know... Our regular co-host, Paula Thompson, is going to be away for the next 3 weeks, today, the week after, and the week after that. So Crystalline has graciously agreed to grace us with her lovely presence. So she is going to be co-hosting with me for the next few weeks. So anyway, Crystalline, fire away and ask Jennifer an opening question. I'm going to put you on the spot here.
No problem. Jennifer, I wanted you to be our guest speaker today because I thought this was an excellent topic for our listeners and chatters and call those who call in to discuss,
mm-hmm.
because a lot of people are confused about whether or not they should be introducing the Arantia book to their children. And mm-hmm. obviously, you probably feel they should. Can you expand on that?
I can. You know, I think the question, should you introduce the Urantia book to your children as your faith? Well, that depends. Do you want your children to be Urantia book readers? And assuming that that is the goal, then absolutely you should. When I got married, I had three stepkids. They were somewhere in the neighborhoods of 9, 11, and 14. And my husband was of the philosophy, like many Urantia book readers, that your kids will learn from your loyalties and they will see your faith and therefore become attracted to that faith for themselves when they get older. And, you know, it really was not as successful as he would have hoped. We, of the three older children, none of them are active in any Urantia community. Although in a crisis or with a question, I think they would turn to the book, but they're not really active readers. So then when we had our two younger children, we decided to try it a little different. And luckily, we live in a community that in Boulder, Colorado, that is very active, and there were lots of kids around, and so there would be potlucks at the church. They would attend, and community functions, Jesus's birthday picnics, stuff like that, they would attend. So it always felt for them like they had a faith community. And then it evolved into a community-organized children's study group where parents, or usually mothers, because it's kind of what we do, would take turns every week while the adults had their study group in the church space we rented. A different mother every week would take on the kids. And some parents did simple art projects, where others had more complicated Urantia-based lessons. And the kids always enjoyed it. Well, as time went on, we moved that study group to our home. And I decided that consistency was important with the kids. And rather than have a different lesson plan every week from a different parent, I would take over the job and have a real consistency every week for these kids. And I can't tell you how excited I am and what a blessing it has been in my life. And I just love being their teacher.
Let me ask you, Jennifer, how many kids usually showed up at the study group every week?
We had seven. So for years...
What a number.
Yeah, funny, yeah. For years, we had seven, and several have since graduated and gone off to college and come back and visit on occasion and, you know, when they're busy, when...
Hello?
Hello?
Are you there, Jennifer?
It looks like we lost her.
Oh, jeez.
Okay,
she'll probably call back in.
Well, she may not know she's not on anymore. But also, I'm having a little problem with the chat board. I have three or four people on the chat room, but I don't see anything happening on the board. So if somebody would send me a message or say something so that I know that it's operating, that would be great. While Jennifer is off the air, I will just say that, I think she's back. Hold on. Hi, Jennifer, are you there?
So you guys will just have to bear with me because phone reception up here.
Jennifer, you're back on the air now.
I am.
We lost you.
Can you hear me? You were talking about the kids graduating and coming back to visit.
Yes, and I apologize. I'm up in the mountains right now, so reception is spotty at best.
You sound really really great when you're on.
So. Yes, absolutely.
All right. So anyway, we have a couple of kids waiting in to join our class, but the stipulation is that they have to be old enough to read some, not necessarily great readers, but able to read, and they have to be disciplined enough to sit and attend a class and not be unruly.
Right.
And
well, let me ask
so,
you, but did you have? Let me ask you something. So you didn't have any lessons then for toddlers or like girls or
no,
people?
No.
Okay.
No. Because, you know, for toddlers, that's a daycare. Are you there?
Yeah. We're still here.
Great. And, you know, that's not what I do. My goal here has been to introduce the Urantia book to these kids so that when they grow up and are choosing their faith, they'll know what they are or they're not choosing in the Urantia book, that they really know what it is and what it says.
Well, that really was a big issue for me in my life, and it's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on and have this topic, because, as some of you know, my brother and I were both raised with the Urantia book, although we never had a study group anywhere close to the type of study group that Jennifer has put on for our kids. We had most of our answers, most of the spiritual questions that came up for us as kids, we were getting Urantia book answers.
Mm-hmm.
And it made a huge difference in our lives. And so I'm somewhat stunned when I hear other readers who are parents who are very reluctant to share this with their kids when they're young. And I just can't even imagine why one wouldn't do that, because in my opinion, you're giving your children the most important gift you could ever give them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well,
and you
up
know,
without fear of God, growing up without being afraid of, you know, making mistakes gives you a tremendous amount of freedom.
Well, and I think that what's nice about our study group and our community as a whole is it brings some normalcy to the faith. You know, they see all of their friends and peers, and they're going to church or to temple, and that's what normal people do. They don't meet in somebody's living room and read this blue book. And with our children's study group, it's always felt very normal and very comfortable. It wasn't that weird thing my parents do. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's packaged and introduced in a very comfortable, normal way.
Yeah. So how do you put it in a comfortable, normal way?
Well, I've tried several different formats over the years, and I think I've landed on something that really works for us. We start every study group with, how was your week? And every child gets to discuss what's going on in their life. And it's complicated because life is complicated. Sometimes it's about an issue they're having at school with peers. Sometimes it's, I won the spelling bee and here's my certificate.
Right.
So every child shares, and it gives every child a chance to feel like they're heard, feel comfortable, and for all of us to get to know each other.
Jennifer,
yeah.
This is Andre. You know what? I need to do something here right now. I need to have you hang up, and I'm going to call you right back because I want to keep one of the lines free so we can make sure we have enough callers. I'm gonna just hang up and I'll call you right back.
And I'm going to, while you guys are off the air, I'm going to bring in a new caller to talk about the same topic.
Okay.
Okay.
Jennifer, just hang up and I'll call you right back.
Okay.
Okay.
Hello, 303, you're on the air.
Hello, is that me?
It's you.
Okay, this is
Hi,
Joan
Mom.
Beek Evans. Hi, dear. I had
I
a little trouble.
I recognize the phone number.
Uh-huh, I could tell. I had a little trouble getting up on my computer, but I'm here now and interested to listen, especially to what Jennifer has to say. I think that's a great idea to ask the kids, you know, to start with, how was your week? And it gives the kids a chance to talk about what's been important to them. And I suspect that probably makes an entree for her into what it is that she wants to study.
Well, we only have 5 lines on our switchboard. And so today I'm asking our callers, if possible, to listen on the internet and not through their phones, because we have several people that have been requested to call in to be on the show. And since you were one of the people requested to call in to be on the show, I was hoping that you would talk a little bit about how you and my father introduced the book to us as kids, or what the experience was like for you bringing kids up with the Urantia book while you were also active Christian. And I'm going to also put Andre and Jennifer back on the air.
Good.
Hello, Andre and Jennifer, are you there?
Yes.
We are.
Yes, we're here.
All right. Joan is just going to tell us a little bit about being a mom and introducing us to the book. Go on,
Joan. Well, I remember that I considered myself rather a failure in this. At least it never was possible to interest you and your brother in study group. For years, we held a small study group in our home, and you weren't the least bit interested in participating in that adult study group, which I can better understand now. So, and you certainly didn't have much interest, especially as you became teenagers, in what the liberal church that we were involved in had to offer in Sunday school the other program.
Confirmation.
Yeah, right. And although I think you went all the way through that, but then made the decision that, no, you did not want to be confirmed. But I think after feeling like having been a failure at this, although I know we just talked about things informally, and I never was very much aware of this as a teaching situation, but it was just, you know, what you shared of your own beliefs and values. And then I think when you, Christy, were out of high school, I invited you to come to a Urantia conference that was nearby. And it seemed like that was what did it. Then you really became interested in the Urantia book and the teaching.
Well, I think conferences would be a great way to introduce kids to the book, because there's so much there's just so much fun that goes on there, you know, especially when they have programs for youth, you know, at the conferences. But, you know, even minus that, I mean, there's just so much relationship building and fellowshipping, and you know, I just remember when I was going to your actual conferences, how naturally I would play with children, and how naturally they were kind of integrated into everything.
And I think that conferences have certainly evolved over the years to be more inclusive of children. And as your Urantia book readers, if our goal is to continue this movement and get new readers, then we've got to make it appealing for children. And that doesn't mean not teaching them, and it doesn't mean, you know, sticking them in a side room with a deck of cards at the conference. It means having Sarah Blackstock's amazing Jerusalem tent, and Tom Choquette and Robert Burns taking them, you know, on these adventures, and really investing time and effort and energy into making it interesting and appealing for our young people.
Absolutely. I think that's critical. And, you know, one of the things that my mom probably didn't realize was that both my brother and I were really hooked on the Urantia book from the very first time we heard about it. because my dad gave us the most exciting, enthralling, thrilling introduction to life after death and the potential for our ability to fulfill all of the real dreams of our heart throughout that eternal adventure. He also said that there was nothing and no one who could ever interfere with our personal choice to know God and to have an eternal life. No one but us could ever, you know, get in the way. That it was all our free will, and that, you know, basically the entire universe was there for the asking, and that it was just one continual adventure of growing and learning. And, you know, my dad always made learning so exciting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he had just finished reading us The Lord of the Rings before he introduced us to the Urantia book. So it was a really natural progression.
Wow.
that sounds weird, but, you know, for us, it was what we were excited about was the adventure of it all. And then I think we were also really blessed by growing up without being afraid of death. I mean, how many people can say that? Why would you not want your kids to be fearless about God and fearless about death? I mean,
Well, I think everybody would. Everybody wants their kids to have those feelings. But it's just knowing how to go about it without feeling like you're forcing your faith. And, you know, as your Urantia book readers, that's a lot of people have that issue.
Right.
You know, they came from forced faith, and they don't want that.
Because the book says, you know, that religion can't be forced upon a child. But, you know, and it can't. But I think that it's kind of like education. It's like saying it's kind of like a parent saying, well, I don't want to force anything on my kids, so I'm not going to send them to school, or I'm not going to teach them anything. Well, that would be obviously, that would obviously be a shirking of parental responsibility. I think that what may be happening in some quarters, and you know, if I may risk being controversial, which I tend to do anyway, I think what may happen in some quarters is that people kind of have this attitude, well, you know, I want my kids to make their own decisions, and I'm not going to, you know, but you've got to expose them to something so that they know, so they have something from which to make a decision from. You know, you give them some kind of a foundation. And, yeah, they can choose to reject it, but at least they'll have something to reject, you know.
Well, that's such a good point, Andre. And I reiterate in my class all the time to the kids, I don't say when you grow up and are a Urantia book reader. I say when you grow up and if you choose to be a Urantia book reader. And, you know, I wanted to finish my statement about what I teach. I just kind of wanted to quickly go through the progression
please
of the
do,
evening.
Please do. We'll try not to interrupt you.
That's all right. So, you know, we have our personal talk, which the kids just love. And so we start out on a great note. And then we read. And we have started at the beginning of the Jesus Papers, and we are working our way through. And we read, frankly, very little because I don't want them to read just for the sake of reading. They get what they're reading. I stop constantly and say, what do you think he meant by that? Has anything like that ever happened to you?
Mm.
How would you feel if you were that apostle? And we discuss. And just for the simple logistics of life, if the kids, as we read, because the book's, you know, it's hard to read, if they hesitate on a word, I read it. And then they read the next word. So there's no shame in stumbling through the reading.
Yeah.
That's the deal. I remember the first time I went to a study group reading out loud, I was mortified. And, you know, you can imagine what it's like to be a kid feeling like that with these big words and different kids are on different levels. I mean, at one point I've had a fourth grader and a college student in the same class. So if they just even hesitate on the word, and as the teacher you read the word immediately and they move on to the next, it really makes for a nice flow. That's one of the little tricks that I found.
Well, one of the things, Jennifer, I just wanted to interject here, one of the things that I think is so great that you're doing as you tell them you read very little, you say you read very little, that you constantly stop and say, okay, what do you think you meant by that? Or, you know, if you think about it, that's actually pretty much par for the course in a lot of adult study groups, too. They do exactly the same thing. They could spend an hour parsing one sentence. I mean, I've seen it. You know, so actually what you're modeling there is perfectly, you know, is exactly what, you know, what a lot of adults do already.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, people like the sound of their own voice. And so when you ask these kids questions and they get to talk about it, they feel important and smart because they are.
Exactly. They are. They have a lot to say.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So it's really worked for me, that format. And then, you know, I do a retreat once or twice a year, depending upon the year. We do field trips, and field trips are Dairy Queen, you know, where one day I'll just surprise them and say, okay, guys, today we're having a field trip. It's very relevant. Jesus is everywhere. Let's see if he's a Dairy Queen. And everybody goes, yay, and we leave. But I break it up, and I make it fun, and they never really know what they're going to get. And I couldn't love it more than I do.
Wow. This is amazing. I never knew about all this stuff. This is fantastic.
Well, it's Andrea, I have a person that he's a second generation Urantia book reader. His parents are readers. And he lives out of the country and comes and visits once in a while and always attends our study group. And the last time he was here, he said to me, "You know, I think it's kind of odd that you don't attend the adult study group for all these years. How come? Are you not a reader?" And I burst out laughing. I said, "You don't know. I'm in the next room with the kids." He didn't know. So, yeah.
Do you ever, one thing that really frustrated me when I first became a Urantia book reader is, and it's actually what kind of, you don't know this, Jennifer, you probably, I don't know how much of my story you know, but for a long time, I was a fundamentalist Christian, and I kind of went back and forth between the Urantia book and evangelical Christianity. I was a born-again Christian for a long time. One of the reasons I was attracted to that, though, is because a lot of Urantia book study groups, at least this is not so true now, but in the past, you know, there was no prayer, no worship, no singing, no nothing. Everybody just kind of, you know, people it was just all intellectual, it was all cerebral. And don't get me wrong, I can parse the book with the best of them, but, you know, I wanted more than that. I wanted, you know, I would go to church with these Christians, and they would say, "God spoke to me this week," you know, "God," you know, and I wasn't hearing that at your answer book study groups.
Mm-hmm.
How much of that did you try to incorporate into your study group with the kids? Did you do any prayer time, any worship time, was there any music? Did you do anything like that?
Yes and no. No music, because Francil doesn't live near me.
Okay.
She is the voice. That's right. She moved. and some prayer. I found that they're mildly uncomfortable with that. So what I've done is we've discussed it intellectually, and I've kind of explained the different techniques. And certainly when Jesus goes off into the mountains alone, we've discussed at length the importance of that, and how to be quiet in your own mind and so that God can speak to you. But when you, in a group setting, when you close your eyes with young kids and try and pray or meditate, they giggle.
Yeah.
It hasn't practically worked for us.
But if you tried, and I'm not trying to tell you what to do here, I'm just curious. Did you ever try praying out loud, for example, and modeling that?
No,
okay.
But I will.
Okay.
I'll give it a try and let you know.
Okay, I did. I'm not telling you to do it. I'm just asking, you know.
Yeah.
Well,
no, I haven't, but I'll give it a try.
One of the things that I have done with other kids that I've been talking with Urantia Book about is talking about how to talk to God. Like, how do you talk to God? And how did Jesus talk to God?
Mm-hmm.
And remember how Joseph and Mary were a little bit frustrated with Jesus when he was a kid because he insisted on talking to his heavenly father like he was just having a conversation with his own dad. And they thought you know, it should be more formal and more ritualized, as was the Jewish custom at that time. And
mm-hmm.
Jesus agreed to follow his parents' wishes, but he insisted on going ahead and having a little chat with my Father in heaven when he was done with the formal prayer. And so I found that kids always love that story. And we sometimes have practiced just talking to God out loud.
Yeah,
like,
that's great. That's exactly what I had in mind.
About the kinds of problems or issues we're having in our life, because one of my favorite lines in the Urantia book is that doing the will of the Father in heaven is no more or no less than sharing the inner life with God. And to me, kids, I mean, my experience as a kid, I had a very rich inner life. And I had a really vivid imagination, and I shared a lot of conversations with God just sort of sitting by myself on the steps or doing whatever I was doing, because I had been programmed, I guess, by my dad to talk to God the way Jesus talked to God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a great idea, breaking the habit of praying for stuff.
Right.
Although, you know
not
what,
just,
I will tell you something,
though. Not thinking of God as Santa Claus.
I also think there's something to be said, though, for prayer being age-appropriate. I mean, I'd rather have a child say to God, you know, God, I want a new bike or whatever. If that's all the kid's capable of at 5 or 6, you know, I think that's okay. I because they're still sharing their inner life, they're sharing their desire with God. I think what Crystal is getting at is just the whole thing of talking to God informally, you know,
mm-hmm.
and sharing.
I also want to let another caller on the line. Can you guys wait for a question here? Okay, 562, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
I think it's Norm
like
from California. He's probably calling in to listen.
Looks like we may have lost them.
Yeah, I think it's probably Norm from California. They usually call.
No, it was a female voice.
Oh, it was. That's interesting.
Well, please call back, and I'll try not to hang up on you.
Jennifer, let me ask you this question, because one of the things I was talking about, I mentioned the word age appropriate for a minute. There are things in the Urantia book that are very complicated, and you had a broad range of ages in your study group. I'm assuming you did, and one of the things that not only is there stuff that's complicated in the book, but, you know, I remember talking to one parent who is no longer a reader, used to be, but she told me, you know, she said she felt really weird about introducing her kids to the Urantia book, especially some of the stories in there, like in the story of Adam and Eve and how, you know, Eve went and you know, had sex with another guy and all this other stuff. You know, how do you, there are certain concepts that are just, you know, how are you going to introduce those concepts to kids? Now, I suppose the same question could come up with the Bible, because I think a lot of people think of the Bible as this goody-two-shoes book, and it really isn't. I mean, there's sex and violence and all kinds of stuff in the Bible. So, you know, how do you determine what's age-appropriate?
Well, I don't, because I'm not the parent, and I don't want to do it. So I am reading the Jesus Papers, and there's really nothing inappropriate in the Jesus Papers is in the way of, you know, sex or stuff like that. You know, certainly there's violence towards the end, but it's the greatest story ever told, and I'm just going to have faith in that. So the as you said, you know, the weird parts of the Urantia book, we're not going there.
Okay,
and
let's take the Jesus Papers though. There's a section. There are some things even in the Jesus Papers that you know, some kids might really be, you know, some parents may have a hard time explaining. For example, there's the part where Jesus is talking to Ganad, and Ganad, pushes away a couple of prostitutes. You know, do you remember that part, that section? And Jesus says,
right.
"Don't do that."
That's a great story.
How do you tell the kids what these women were into?
I just didn't feel like that was that racy.
Okay.
I just told them.
Oh,
they were hookers.
Most kids these days know a lot more than you think they know anyway.
Exactly. I have one child in the kids I've had over the years come and go. I have one child that's, let me find the right word, sheltered, pretty sheltered. And I think things like that might make her mildly uncomfortable. But there's only been one, and, you know, if my feeling is if it made it into the Urantia papers, the Jesus papers, then I'm not going to edit. I'm not going to second guess. It's the most important information we can gain on this earth life, and I'm going with that.
So even when you had 6-7-year-old kids in the group, you would still read that part?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I don't edit. I don't edit.
Okay.
You know, and there's parts that are boring. See, that's the thing that
yeah,
I think is more relevant.
I'm much more worried about the boring parts than the racy parts.
Exactly. The boring parts, sometimes that's hard because I have made the commitment to read every single word. So we're doing that. But we just trudge through it and we get better dessert that week.
Wow. I know we have people that are supposed to be calling in, but I do want to give out our phone number because I want to make sure if anybody who's on the board is interested in calling, anybody listening, and talk about this. Maybe you're a parent and you want to try to figure out how to introduce the book to your children. Please feel free to give us a call. Our number is 646-716-8158. That's 646-716-8158.
Now, we had Reagan waiting on the line to call in, and she just hung up. So, Reagan, please call back. I just didn't have a chance yet to interrupt the conversation and put you on the air. Oh, here she is.
Good.
Hold
Reagan
on.
Is one of my students.
Hello, Reagan. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
You're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Ray.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Reagan, how old are you?
I am 15.
So, Reagan, how long have you been attending our study group?
I think for about 6 years.
Okay. And what do you like best about study group?
Well, I like that it's there every week and it's always available, and I like how we get a chance to read, and then we also get to just talk around and we can, understand what we've just read, because, like, if we read a section and we don't understand it, we always go over it, and so we understand what we have just read.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. And would you say, you know, you're in high school, and you
yeah.
have an active social life, and you still find time to come every Tuesday. Why is that?
Well, because I like coming, and I don't know, it's later at night, so I can get all my homework done. I can see my friends if I want to, and it's a lot of fun to come. So it's not like I have to come because it's a study thing. It's because I want to see the people that come there.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything?
I love this. I love this because you know what? This is so great, Reagan. Because what you're saying is you want to go. This isn't like, you know, I mean, I don't know if some of your friends say to you, God, I got to go to church this week again. I really don't want to go. My parents are making me go. You know, it's not like that. This is something enjoyable. This is fun. This is not a duty. This is something you're doing because you want to do it. And no
yeah.
one's forcing you to do it.
Yeah.
And that's exactly the way it should be.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, yes.
So, Reagan, do you think that you'll be a Urantia book reader when you grow up, or do you think, you know, you're going to be a Buddhist or a Catholic, or, you know, what are you thinking?
I think I want to be a Urantia book reader because I've grown up with it, and I understand a lot of it because we've been reading it in the Jesus papers. We know all about it, and a lot of the ideas appeal to me, and I really like that. So, yes, I think because of this, I will be a Urantia book reader.
By the way, I don't want to further confuse you, Reagan, and this is Andre. I know you've never met me, I don't think, but I don't want to further confuse you, but you can be a Buddhist or a Catholic and be a Urantia book reader if you want to.
That's absolutely true. I think that's
always
really
the
great.
Liberal faith. We've just got to always put in that part of it.
I think that's a really good comment to make because I had somebody ask at a retreat that I was at this last weekend, you know, what about religion? You know, like what religion will we be promoting? And we all kind of stopped and said, well, whatever religion anyone wants to be involved in is welcome. You know, that's the blessing of reading the Urantia book is we know that all religions have some truth in them. And it's basically following the path to God that you feel most comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really freeing for kids too. What do you think, Reagan?
Well, I think that the Urantia book is more of a way of, like, living, and it's not just a religion that you base your whole life of. I think that, like, it has really good points, and I think you can have whatever religion you want to, because it doesn't just base around all one thing. It branches out to different ones.
Yeah. Good point.
Yeah, good point. And, you know, okay, so here's the difference. And, Reagan, you'll appreciate this.
Yeah.
When I was raised Catholic, and you have your first Holy Communion, and then you have your confirmation as kind of your rites of passage as you get older. And in our community, we don't have any of that stuff. We don't have the ritualistic, buy the white dress and the bouquet of flowers and, you know, have your family over for a Kentucky Fried Chicken afterwards. And so I was trying to think of, like, what could be a rite of passage for
yes,
these
this is
kids.
So important. I'm glad you're making this up. Yeah.
And so in typical Urantia Book Reader, non-traditional, wacky way, I came up with this idea where when each of my kids, and I've had recently it's just been girls, turns 13, what happens, Reagan?
You redecorate their entire room and just, I don't know, overhaul their room. And
that's right. I go to
out.
Their house. We organize. We have a meeting before, and we say, and I say, okay, you're 13. You're a teenager now. Your life is going to be more organized and structured for school and life, and we're going to get rid of all of your clutter, do it together, and have your room feel like it's a reflection of who you are,
yeah.
Not who you were as a kid or what your mom thought should be in there.
Yeah.
And so they, for several weeks before they turn 13, each girl really thinks about what they want their space to look and feel like. And then we go in and we do it. And you
what
know,
about
just,
for boys?
What about what?
What about for boys?
It was Lucas, my son, and
that
doesn't
so you
count.
Did you did his too.
That doesn't count. It's Lucas. But you know, it's just you don't have to have traditional. That's one of the great freedoms of the Urantia book is it's so non-traditional. You can kind of make this stuff up as you go along. And not that decorating a room is a spiritual thing. It's clearly not. But I don't think it, neither is walking down the aisle of a church in a white dress at, you know, at age 10 or whatever it is that you do that at. It's just little things that bring a community together and make kids want to attend your study group,
you know,
and give you things to talk about and have in common. And as a teacher, I get to go into their home, into their space, into their heart, and into their head and say, what do you want your space to look like and feel like? And it brings on a level of intimacy that I think is really beautiful.
I agree 100%. I think, and actually I would argue that decorating a room could be a spiritual thing because it could be like creating a sacred space. But the thing that's interesting about this to me is I find that some Urantia Book Readers have thrown the baby out with the bathwater. What they've said is, oh, you know, we can't have any rituals. We can't have any traditions. Everything's just got to be, you know, kind of do whatever, you know, do your own thing, spirituality. But what I see you doing here is actually, and I think I'd love to see our community create rituals and create it's interesting because I'd like to see, what I really would like to see is even more diversity in the Urantia community. You could have some groups that are more, that have more rituals, some that have less, some, and I just don't, you know, as long as it's not, you know, something that's rigid and inflexible, I just don't see why, I don't see how the Revelators would be opposed to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, God responds to the slightest flicker of faith, and, I don't think they'd be opposed to much if it's done in a good heart and with the right intention.
Exactly.
So, Reagan,
well, Maymay is on the air, on the chat board this morning, and she can't call in from where she is, but she wanted for me to say hi to Jennifer and to Reagan, and
she's
to let all
one
of
our
listeners.
Students, and she's 13.
Yeah,
and she's been part of the group since she was about 4, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Anyway, she said she wanted me to say that, she wanted me to tell everybody that study group for kids is really wonderful. Mm-hmm. And yeah. it helps to have a grown-up in the group because it helps them understand it more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as a parent, there are Tuesday nights where, you know, one of my kids has been sick all week or, you know, I have aging parents that I'm helping to take care of and I'm like, oh, my gosh, it's Tuesday night again, okay. But there has never, ever, ever been a day where these kids don't walk in my house and I'm not thankful to see them. I may have to scramble to get there, but I see those smiling faces walk into my house and I'm just so glad.
Did you find that switching the group from the church to your house, did you find that to be more personal, a warmer kind of feeling rather than just, you know, being in a church basement or whatever?
You know, I think God is wherever you bring, you invite him. There are certainly pros and cons to having an in-home as opposed to an in-church study group. Chris Halverson has one in the church, and there's a really great feel to that, and it's so open to the public because it's in a public place, whereas ours is more, it's really more by invitation only because it's in our home, and ours feels more intimate. So there's pros and cons, and I don't think there's a right or a wrong way. I've done both for many years, and I like them both. Now, for me, with the kids in our study group, I like being in my house. But I could do it elsewhere and have.
And even though your study group is, quote, by invitation only, it's a huge study group.
Yeah.
I mean, you frequently
have
25
adults. There's a lot of invitations. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And I also wanted to mention or have you bring up why you asked Reagan to come on the air today.
Because Reagan has been a member of our team, our class, for years, and she's eloquent. I knew she could express, you know, what she thought and what she felt, and she's also really candid and honest. So, Reagan, is there anything you don't like about study group? Is there anything you'd change?
I don't think there would be anything that I could change except for, I don't know, maybe having it a little bit earlier because I like to sleep and I get to bed at 8:30 on regular nights and study group ends at about 9. So
right,
one thing
right.
Other than that, yeah.
Right, and herein lies the problem there. It's a weeknight, which we found is in general a more successful time for people because lots of people travel on weekends or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And with adults that work, these days people get off work, you know, it's no longer 9 to 5, it's 9 to whatever, 8 to whatever. And by the time they have dinner, we can't get adults to our home before 7. So we do study group from 7 until 8:30, and then the girls and I serve everybody dessert until 9:15, and then by the time Reagan gets home, it's 9:30, 9:40. Am I right, Reagan?
Yeah.
So it's late for a kid, but I don't know that we could do it any other way.
That's really interesting.
Well,
it's really interesting.
Go ahead, Andre.
I was going to say, it's really interesting to hear a teenager admit that they like to sleep because most of them like to say they like to stay up all night.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
Reagan,
they have recently found out that teenagers need a whole lot more sleep than adults and even than younger kids. So she's on the right track.
Yeah. And I know what else, Reagan. We should have more retreats.
Yes, more retreats to Vail.
That would
be nice. Yes.
We go up to the mountains and we will go to a hot springs and swim and we'll make meals together and we'll do a little meditation and we always have some kind of a project, a spiritually oriented project.
What a spiritually oriented project might look like.
Sure. Reagan, you want to talk about it?
All right. Well, we have a thing where we do decoupage, and it's like a canvas, and you have pictures, and you kind of paste it onto it. And what we do is well, we had a bunch of spiritual words, and we each voted on who would get each word. And so, like, mine, one of mine was, like, I was very spiritual, and we'd put it on there and incorporate pictures into what our spiritual quality would be.
Mm-hmm. So I wrote up on the computer a bunch of words that were either in the Urantia book or that were just spiritually oriented. And I cut them up into little pieces of paper, and the kids got to choose words that were that they felt was a reflection of who they were. And then as a group, we got to choose words and give them to other people. Like,
oh,
May, for example, like May, for example, I don't know if you're listening, May, but May's very humble. She doesn't like to talk about herself. She doesn't like to, you know, you always have to drag stuff out of May. You know, how was your week, May? Oh, it was fine. And then Paula will tell me that, you know, she won some big award at school, and we have to go back and say, May!
Every week. Every week it's like that.
Yeah, yeah. And so she didn't want to choose words that might make her feel like she was bragging on herself and how good or how spiritual or how Jesus-like she was. So we had to force words on May. But once we gave them to her, she took them. And then we brought these words along with canvases and photography and stuff up to the mountains where we just hid for the weekend and did that as part of an art project. And you'd be amazed at some of the conversations that occur because of time like this and topics like this.
Now, I know that you say you're not the parent, so you don't want to, there are certain things you don't want to do. You said, like, for example, determine what's age appropriate. But the fact is, Jennifer, that you are, you're not a parent, or you're not the parent of these children, except your children. But you're definitely, the fact is, you are serving as a mentor in their lives. You're providing guidance. You're providing, and you're serving a kind of parental role in a sense. And I guess what I want to ask you is, well I guess the thing that comes up for me as you're talking about this is, to me, the most important thing that you're doing is just bonding. You know, you're
mm-hmm.
bonding with these kids. And they probably come to you with questions. They probably confide things in you. That gives you an opportunity to, I don't mean preach to them or tell them what to do, but it gives you an opportunity.
They definitely
to give them guidance and direction, and you know, which, you know, I you know, it's funny. There's a place in the Rancho book that says, "Don't give advice unless it's asked for." That's true. But then you also look at the place in the Jesus papers, the young man who was afraid. The guy was obviously asking for advice with his eyes. You know, and it's you know. So I guess my point is simply that a lot of these kids, and I can't speak for the kids in the group, but a lot of kids growing up these days who are not raised with any religion at all, and you know, I think people have this. Again, we have to be careful we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater because, yeah, we want to be progressive. We want to let the kids make their own decisions. But the fact is that a lot of these kids are hungry. They're starving. They're starving for direction. They're starving for guidance. They're starving for truth. They're starving for an adult to say, to give them some clear boundaries and say, you know, I don't mean rigid boundaries, but, you know, but they're starving for an adult to say to them, you know what, I would really encourage you to do this or this. Or they're starving for affirmation. There's so many things. And I just want to applaud you for doing this because I think that, you know, what you're really doing to me, what's even more important than just, you know, you're not just shoving your answer book information down these kids' heads. You're doing something relational. You're bonding with those kids. And
mm-hmm.
that to me is, you know, the most important thing you can do.
Well, and, you know, the other big important factor in this is consistency. Every Tuesday,
right,
they know where to go. And we have one young lady in our study group, Ella Rose, who is the youngest in our group. But she is so smart, so insightful, an excellent reader. And her parents cannot attend on Tuesday nights. So she gets a ride and with Paula, actually, and comes every week. And so I feel like her parents have given me this gift. You know, here's our child every Tuesday. Do with her what you will.
Right.
And it's a leap of faith for them that their precious child is getting this information from me. And she's getting it because, you know, she's so smart. She really understands, even though she's very young.
She's
and
brilliant.
So it's an honor.
So they trust you with her.
They trust me, and it's an honor and a responsibility I really take very seriously.
And not only are your students bonding with you, but they're really bonding with each other, too.
Oh,
and
they're very close.
There's that support network of spiritualized kids. I mean, really, from the youngest to the oldest, they've been sort of growing up together, and they've been part of each other's lives for this ongoing process, and I think they really trust each other, and they'll love each other. What do you think about that, Reagan?
Well, I've known all the kids in study group for so long, and I feel comfortable calling them when I need to, and I love that there's always someone else there, and it's not just me, and like, I know May really well, and I love May and Ella. And then Alyssa, who was the oldest, who is now in college, so she can't attend all the time now, but I love all of them, and it's really great having them there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just
absolutely.
To mention Alyssa, Alyssa and Lydia were wonderful when Reagan first moved there. They kind of like adopted her as her older sisters, and they were really there for you in a lot of ways, weren't they?
Yes, definitely. Always. All the time.
See,
they taught me how to ride my bike.
You said they taught you how to ride a bike?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing I like about this, because what you're also describing, Reagan, see, when I first came to study group, at least in the area I was in, I felt like the people I studied with, a lot of them weren't really my friends. I felt like they were just people I studied the Ranch book with. But, I mean, if they're teaching you how to ride a bike, you know, this is more than just, you know, people you see on Tuesday and that's it and you're done. I mean, it sounds like these kids are really your friends.
They are my friends.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I have a house full of guests, and I told them I'd be gone an hour, and it's been an hour.
It's time for you to get off the air.
I'm thankful to have been able to do this, and God bless you all. And
thank you so much for coming on to be with us, Jennifer. It's been really wonderful having you here.
Well, thank you, Crystal.
Thank
you so much.
I think the show's going to get a lot of downloads. I really do.
All right. Have a great day. And give our love to Mo and the kids.
Thank you.
Bye,
bye-bye.
Jen. Bye, Jen.
Bye-bye.
And we have another caller. Joan Evans is back with us, so I'm going to put her back on the air, too. And, Reagan, you can stay with us, can't you?
Yes.
Okay, great. Hello, Joan. You're on the air. Hello, Joan. Well, maybe she set the phone down.
Oh, no.
Anyway, let's go ahead and keep talking. One of the things that May said on the chat room was that she really loves coming to study group, that Jen really does teach you, but it's also really great reading with kids her own age.
Mm-hmm.
And I understood that one of the reasons I asked Jennifer to tell about why she wanted to have you on the air is that she's actually going to have you leading the study group for a while she is going to be involved with some other opportunities.
In cooking school.
Right.
So, on Tuesdays I come, and they're all there, and she asked me to just kind of lead them, but it's not like I'm leading them as a teacher. It's just that I kind of watch over it, but we're all there, and we haven't been reading lately, but we have to start doing that, because lately we've been just doing homework and watching American Idol.
Hey, that sounds like a great year-round study group to me.
Have you guys gotten through the entire Jesus papers in all the years that you've been reading together?
Well, when we were littler, we couldn't read that fast, and we used to have whiteboards, and we have to spell out the words and stuff like that, so it took it really slow, but I think we're like 3/4 of the way there, and that's pretty good for us, I think, getting through the Jesus papers.
Now, I know that's the only part of the book you read, but do you know, for example, has Jennifer talked to you guys about what the book says about life after death, for example, which is a different part of the book?
Yes. We sometimes talk about like how we move up and we're with the people we love and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And but we haven't really talked all that much about it because it's in like dimensions I don't even understand at all. So
right. But there's even a place in the Jesus Papers where Jesus says the kingdom of heaven is an evolutionary experience, and he talks about how you go to a series of stopping places. You know, this
yeah.
you know, and it's kind of like a school. You know, that this is like kindergarten, pre-K, and then you die, you go to kindergarten, and you go to first grade, second grade, you know. So but anyway, I was just curious because that's one of the things Crystal mentioned earlier, that her dad gave her such a vivid picture of life after death, and I think that's where the Urantia book is probably most unique. I think it's one of the places that really stands out from other religious texts and books is its view of life after death, because it's not reincarnation, and it's also not you just go straight to heaven. It's like you get resurrected, but you go like to higher levels, you know.
And it's not really like the Catholic image of purgatory either, where you're being sort of held in kind of almost in jail until they decide what to do with you.
Right.
And like I said earlier, I don't know if you were listening to the show then, Reagan, but I was just saying that the way Dad introduced the book to me and to David was that we were talking about the topic of death. Because we had a sibling that died right after birth. My mom had TB when she was pregnant, and the medication they gave her was later found to cause severe birth defects. And so, of course, the whole family was really grief-stricken at losing the baby, but it got us talking about what death was. And Dad told us about the mansion worlds, and what he said basically was that all of the afterlife was this thrilling adventure of learning and growing, and that we would eventually, throughout our eternal ascension program, we would eventually really get to live out every dream of our heart. And that was just such a wonderful way to introduce us to the ideas in the Ranch book. And he also said that nothing anyone else could do or would do could ever interfere with our eternal life and our eternal destiny, that it was totally up to us because we lived in a free will universe, and like God was a gentleman and he didn't impose himself on us, but he would be there as much as we needed him or wanted him to be in our lives. So that was really, really a different kind of introduction than I think some people have of God when they're kids.
Mm-hmm.
Joan is back on the air. Hello, Joan. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you. I had some trouble. I got knocked off for a while. Can you hear me?
We can. Did you have mm-hmm. some comment or question?
Well, I would just like to ask Reagan if there was a particular story in her study group that she enjoyed, maybe a story about Jesus. Was there any one, Reagan, that kind of stood out for you that you really liked?
Well, there was one where Jesus healed a boy who had rabies or something like that, where he was like foaming at the mouth and stuff, and he touched the head of the boy, and then he kind of...
Oh, yeah, he was having epileptic seizures.
Epileptic seizures, yeah. And then Jesus fixed it, and nobody believed he could, and he proved the guys, because some of the people who were watching him said, oh, we can do it, and then they tried, and then Jesus really did it and kind of showed them up, but in a humble way, I don't know. So I really like that story. I don't know why, but...
Good. Well, it makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any other comments or questions for Reagan, Andre?
No, I not at the moment. I just, I don't have anything to say right now. So,
well, I'm interested in finding out. You said you haven't really started really studying at study group lately, but did you feel at all intimidated about being asked to sort of be leading the study group while Jen was gone?
Not at all, because I know all of them really well, and it's not like you get nervous to go there or read or anything. It's just you're there and you do it every week. I've been doing it for a while, and it's just basically the hardest thing about leading that group would be to get everyone settled down and to read instead of just all over the place haywire. But no, and yeah, I wasn't nervous.
Cool.
Well, I remember, Christy, one of our other Urantia parents, I think it was at the Canadian conference, who talked about introducing his kids to the Urantia book primarily through stories. Would either you or Reagan care to comment about that?
About how what? Jesus taught through stories?
And about how introducing, I think what she's saying is that introducing the Urantia book to children through stories. Well, it's interesting because, you know, the whole Jesus paper, the Jesus papers are a story. That's really what it is. So actually, you know, that makes a lot of sense. I don't know if this person was using other kinds of stories. I mean, I actually, you know, Crystal and your dad, as you said, your dad read you The Lord of the Rings before you introduced. So, you know, you've got there are all kinds of, I think using stories makes a lot of sense. Whether it's stories from the Urantia book directly or other kinds of stories that can serve as kind of metaphors, you know.
Well, and I think one of the things that I've learned as being, well, as a member of an interfaith, an active sort of interfaith outreach, is that when we share our personal stories of spiritual significance or our personal relationships with God, with each other, they're always universally acceptable, understandable, opening. You know, it's not the same thing as sharing our theology with each other or our ideas about religion. When we're sharing our actual religious experiences, it's really fascinating. And when we share stories with each other about how a spiritual influence has affected maybe a particular challenge in our life, or maybe how we have dealt with a really traumatic experience, how our faith has helped us with that, I think that's really helpful. I mean, I felt very supported in that way when I was a kid, because my dad was quite the storyteller, and he made stories up all the time, and most of his stories included me and my brother.
Oh, wow.
And they would be, you know, fantasies or fiction, but there would always be some kind of a spiritual message that was woven into the story.
Like you and the giant?
Right. Anyway, I just think that for those people who are listening, that's one of the best ways to talk to your kids about God, is sharing stories of your life with your kids and how having faith helped you to deal with the challenges and traumas that everyone has in their life. What do you think, Reagan?
Well, I think that would be a really good way. Like, let's say a kid wasn't sharing with her brother or something like that, and the father or the mother said, listen, well, what would you do? Like, then they said, well, I want this, and I'll fight for it, and stuff like that, and then the mom says, well, here's a different way, and then she reads a little story from the Jesus papers or from any part of the Urantia book to say, like, this is what Jesus would do, and this is what, like, this is how he got over it without any fighting and stuff, and then always incorporate that really consistently and always make it like that. And then when they're old enough to read, they'll understand and be like, oh, these are the stories my mom told me when I was little and stuff like that. And they'll get really intrigued into it and pulled into it.
And I think that's a great way of doing it. I think what Crystal is saying, though, too, is that you don't even have to use the Urantia book. Sometimes you can use other kinds of stories. See, one of the things that I think is so great is in the Urantia book, it says that Jesus took truth wherever it came from. So, you know, there's a lot of truth in fairy tales, for example. There's truth in myths. There's truth in Bible stories. There's truth in stories from different religions. And, what Christian said, that her dad used to make up stories. I think it's great to integrate. You know, I don't know if you are aware of this, Reagan, but the authors of the Urantia book used a lot of, they used a lot of different sources. Like they used a lot of books that were around at that time, at the time the revelation came to us. They used a lot of human sources that were around. So they integrated, they didn't just give us a pure revelation. They integrated things from existing sources, you know. So mm-hmm. I think it's great, you know, I think it'd be great if, you know, if I were teaching a Urantia book study to kids, I think I would also use other things, you know, use the Bible or use the Quran or use fairy tales and myths and other things, you know, to integrate it with the Urantia book. And, I, you know, mm-hmm. as long as I don't know if kids would get confused by that. I don't think they would. I think
no, I don't think they would either. And, you know, they almost every religious organization out there has sort of a kid's version or kid's book stories.
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't matter what religious tradition you're coming from, there are kids' versions for you to read.
Right.
And they all have really powerful messages of truth. So I think also it doesn't matter where it comes from.
Yeah, I have a book of morals from when I was a really little kid, and they just have, like, they're all these different stories about, like, animals or fairies or giants or whatever,
right,
and they're all
right.
just, they all have morals to them, and they all present different situations that you need to fix with good thought and stuff like that.
Right.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's funny because you mentioned fairies and dragons and things like giants. You know, it's interesting, and this may sound like a bit of a strange thing to say at this point, but, you know, I think one of the things that really helps children, Megan, are you a, or sorry, Reagan, are you a Harry Potter fan by any chance?
I am the number one Harry Potter fan.
All right. Well, good.
Yeah.
Because I think, I don't know about you, but I think, see, I think, you know, there are some Christians, you know, you may know this, they think Harry Potter is evil, they think it's from the devil and all this other silly stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, that fantasy is really good for kids. And I think it's, and I think one of the ways, we talked about imagination a while back. And I think, Crystal, you mentioned you had quite an imagination, quite an inner life. I think that cultivating a child's imagination is really good for a lot of things. But I think one of the things it does, I think it can attract the child to spiritual things. Because I think fantasy is really good for kids. Because what it does is it gets kids to start thinking that there might be a world beyond this one. There might be something out there beyond just what they can touch and see and sense. And so I think, you know, I think if my child, I would tell my kids fantasy stories if I had children, and if they asked me, well, Daddy, are dragons real? You know what I would say? I'd say, well, I don't know. You know, and that would actually be a true statement because I really don't know. And, you know, it would also be, and I think it would be a great way to get the child to start wondering and, you know, increase that sense of wonder, you know, in a child. And I think that would, that's just something that I really feel strongly about.
Well, we have another comment from the board that Michael said, I think it's also key that we set an example through how we live our lives, not just through the words that we teach. And he said, too, parents need to be ready to explain why we make the choices we make, whether it's via story or just through regular conversation. And I commented back that, you know, one of the things it says in the Urantia book is that kids learn more from their parents' loyalties than they do from just what they say, just what they tell us. I know that I learned a lot from how my parents reacted to life crises and how they reacted to personal difficulties. They simply didn't give in to fear or anxiety most of the time. I mean, very rarely. I mean, they might have gotten anxious about, you know, whether the house was clean or whether the dishes were done, but they weren't really anxious about the kinds of things that it appeared other people were anxious about. They weren't afraid. They didn't live their lives being afraid of potential disaster. Mom, are you still on the air?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
Well, and I have to commend you for that, too, because you came from a very fearful mom. So I thought it was really quite a step in the right direction for you to have been so faith-filled rather than fear-filled. You know, you just weren't really a worrier. I learned a lot from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've also talked about our experiences with forgiveness and how I started out with little episodes of forgiveness, and then they got bigger and bigger, and till some of them were kind of really whoppers. And yet it always worked for my highest good to practice forgiveness, and I remember you said that was something that was helpful to you.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, not too long ago I had to deal with a forgiveness, you know, an issue in my life that required a lot of effort for me to transcend my sort of natural or more animal feelings of resentment or hurt, where someone I was trying to help was, you know, genuinely trying to help, became really mistrustful and fearful of me, and actually tried to have me arrested for something that was just way out in left field. And I was really blown away by that. And one of my closest friends at the time was really angry that this person had done this to me. And I remember thinking, you know, what we really need to do is pray for her, because imagine how much pain she must be in to be turning on those who are trying to help her. She must just be living sort of a life of paranoia and fear. So that was something that came to me because of the influence of the way my mom dealt with forgiving those who had, who were, you know, really trying to hurt her. Anyway, we have a couple more callers on the air. Let me see who we have. Hang on.
Came to me.
Hello. 5-2, you're on the air.
Yes,
you're going to need to turn down your computer audio.
Trying to find the control.
We have a couple more callers on the air.
Let me see. Here we go. How's that? Is that okay now?
Yes. Who is this, Norman?
Aloha, everyone. Yes, this is Norman. I'm finally settled down where I can speak a few moments. And just very taken back by the program today and the interest in the youth and all, because they are the Urantians of tomorrow. And they could be that today. But one of the joyful things I was wanting to share with the group as far as children are concerned is Pradana Vukes and John, a friend of his in Chile, went to Patagonia. And there's a YouTube Chile Part 4 showing a youth group in a prayer circle that will be very leading for everyone if they want to look it up. But they just, in 20 days, completed 26 library placements and met hundreds of young people throughout their trip. And so it will be interesting to see the results. And but they did such a great job, and all for the youth. So that's what I had to add today.
Norman, when you're talking about youth on their trip, what age groups are they generally talking to?
Well, they're usually small, you know, groups of families, and you know the ages are, they're all ages, you know, from babies on, but I would say anywhere from 15, 16 to 25, 30, something like that. I call that youth. It may be old for some people, but anyhow, so that's the show on that. But if you can look up on the YouTube Chile Part 4, you can see his last video, little clip they put out. And in fact, you can go through all of them if you want, and it shows all the people I met along the way in the libraries and prisons and an orphanage, I believe. And so I know the full story will be coming out shortly, and just wanted to let you know about it to add it to your youth conversation today.
Well, thanks, Norman. I appreciate that.
Sure. Any questions?
Well, For those of you who don't know Norman, Norman Ingram has traveled all over the world, primarily Africa and South America, placing books in libraries and schools and religious organizations and meeting individuals all along his travels. And he started doing that many years ago. Norman, I think you were probably one of the first sort of Johnny Appleseeds of our movement going out and placing books outside of North America, don't you think?
No, I think a lot had gone on before and a lot has gone on since, but we haven't scratched the surface. So if anyone wants to jump in, there's plenty of room. There's plenty of room. Just jump in and taste the water, and you get out in mission, and it, like with Pradhana and other people we've worked with and mentored along the way, there's nothing that gives you more thrill of loving service than to be on mission. Of course, we don't have to travel to be on mission, but, you know, it's really, really, because you just get there with a box of books of truth under your arm, and you don't need to worry about who, where, when they come to you. You just make yourself available.
And, well, you know, I've always had an idea that that would be a wonderful project for your rancher youth to do, like either a year or two-year mission out
spreading
the rancher book around the way the Mormons do with their young people.
On mission, a lot of times, if during the day we come into a restaurant or a coffee shop and there's the Mormon group from, you know, America, we join right in with them, and because we're all preaching the good news, and so it all works out very well. But I find that we've been finding people with the fruits of the Spirit long before the Urantia book. I find with the Urantia book it makes it much easier. And there's more, and it's only the fifth, so there's more to come. And that, so, I'm in the midst of spreading the truth as the book describes it to us as being, and it's truly a thrill.
Our lines are all filled right now, so if any of you are done with your comments, Reagan, I'd like for you to stay on the air, but if anyone else can free up a line by dropping off now, that would be great.
How do we do that without losing the program?
Well, you can go on the internet and hear the program online.
Okay, thanks.
Love you,
right,
Joan.
Bye.
Bye, Joan.
And Norman, bye-bye. I just wanted to tell you that it was wonderful having you in my class at the Boulder School.
It was a thrill to be there.
Wasn't that a wonderful experience? That
always.
I would say we were not all youths when we were there.
No, not exactly.
And that was another really wonderful bonding experience that brought a lot of people together and helped us to really form a solid extended family community.
Most definitely. Wonderful.
Well, keep up.
Okay, that's it for me now. So, so long till next time, and you guys keep up.
All right.
God bless.
Thank you so
much.
So, somebody on the chat board said we should be able to have as many lines as we want, but we don't. In fact, we actually only have 5 call-in lines, and one of our hosts uses one of the lines. So I'm not trying to be rude when I'm asking people to make room, but we have had a lot of people who mentioned they wanted to call in and discuss.
That's perfectly normal on talk radio. I mean, people call in and then they hang up and like go into the next caller, so it makes total sense. Don't worry about it.
Well, I wanted to give you guys some feedback. Alice Arkin had sent a notice out to everybody on her Urantia group on Facebook this last week, telling them that we were going to have this topic. And one of the people said that it really piqued their interest because they always wondered how they would broach that subject with their kids. and that they would really like to hear some ideas from us about how to introduce your kids to the Urantia book. So I'd like to discuss if we didn't, if somebody lives in an area where they don't have a study group for kids, and let's say that they're just a lone reader, or maybe a lone family reading without any other readers around, does anybody have any ideas or suggestions? And I wanted to sort of field that to Reagan, and that may not be a fair question for you, Reagan, since you were introduced to the book through a study group. But have you ever tried introducing the book to other kids?
Well, once my friend asked me to come over to her house on Tuesday night, and I said I couldn't do it because I had to go to study group. And they're like, is that, do you do homework? And I said, no, we study the Urantia book. And she said, what's the Urantia book? And I said, well, it's kind of a different form of, I don't know, it's kind of a different idea of what the Bible is, but it's, I don't know, it's different. It's different. And she said, oh, okay, well, that seems interesting, but I don't think she reads it, but she knows about it now.
Right, right.
Hey,
you didn't feel uncomfortable telling her about it?
Not at all, not at all.
Crystal, can we take some calls here? Because you said you have the lines filled.
Okay. Hold on just one moment. Hello, 904, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Joan Mullins.
Hi, Joan, how are you?
Hi,
good.
Joan, I was hoping you'd call in. You know, let me ask you, is Michelle calling in too? Because I wonder if she's
I don't know if she will or not.
Okay.
But,
do you have anybody? She's in Boulder, right? So she would be.
Yes.
She should be. Is anybody from the 303 area code on the board, on the switchboard, Crystal?
Well, just Reagan.
Okay, just Reagan. Okay. Joan, I'm so glad you called in. You had a study group kind of similar, I guess, to what Jennifer did at your house. With kids and with Larry, your husband, for several years, correct?
Yes, yes, and it was also with Claire Thurston and the Thurston kids. And what's nice was that you can have, you know, we had just like two families, so it wasn't a study group. It was just a study group for the kids, and they'd meet once a week, and we'd start with pizza. Because kids love pizza.
Yeah, that's I remember Larry said you guys had. I was going to mention the pizza, because that's very important.
And the kids would start with pizza, and they could eat the pizza and watch TV or hang out and whatever until that. And then we'd start the group. And what we would do is it was more child-centered, so that the kids would take turns facilitating. And, you know, we had adolescents and teenagers. And so what they would do is they'd start with any quote that they wanted from the Urantia book. And sometimes that meant just picking out something right then, and they'd read a quote for all of us to share, and then they'd say a prayer, just a spontaneous prayer, which
awesome.
I'll tell you, those prayers were beautiful.
Oh, that's what I was asking Jennifer about that too. If she hadn't tried that yet, but I think that's wonderful to model that kind of spontaneous prayer, and
yeah,
that's just
and
wonderful.
Because
I find myself sometimes with readers, a lot of times, and everybody's got to do what they're comfortable with, but some readers I find don't want to pray out loud. And I think that's wonderful that you modeled that. That's just fantastic. Tell us more.
Yeah, because after the adults did it, you know, after a while, then the kids would just
right.
do it. And they would know. And it was really neat. And then we would just go around and read the book. And we actually started with the foreword.
Wow.
And that's what they wanted. They wanted to start with the foreword because we had had a Jesus Papers study group before that, using stories from the Jesus Papers. And when we said, you know, we're thinking of having a Urantia book study group for you guys, or you want to do it, and you want to start just reading the Urantia book, and they were like, at last! You know, it was so cute. So they started with the foreword, and we went through it and answered their questions. And it's amazing how they were really liked it. And we ended up reading the entire Urantia book.
Wow.
Well, that's pretty impressive. And that took about 8 years.
8 years. That's amazing.
You know what?
Yeah. Well, the wonderful thing was when we finished, and, you know, the kids are now teenagers at that by that time, and we thought, well, okay, we finally finished. Maybe they'd want that night free, you know, to do a million things. And they were like, let's start over. And we did. Wow. So the very next week, we started reading the foreword again.
Now, okay, when you started, when you first started the foreword, what were the ages of the kids in the study group? I'm really curious about this one.
Let's see. Michelle was about, maybe about 14. Let's see, probably ranged, Claire Thurston, she may be calling in too. She probably knows better. But, they were like in elementary school, probably 11, 10.
Is that when you first started reading? And that, see, what I think is
And
so
they could do that. They read. We took our time. Larry had this little illustration, the foreword made ridiculously easy or something with little pictures of characters explaining the foreword.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That is amazing.
I
love about this?
That.
I'm sorry, Crystal. This is so cool to me. What I think is so cool about this is what I'm getting from this conversation that I guess I didn't realize before. I was talking to Jennifer about what's age appropriate and all that, and maybe we're too worried about that. Maybe kids really want a challenge.
They do.
Maybe we need to. Maybe we're underestimating them. They think, oh, they can't handle this or they can't handle. I think as long as we. The other thing is you can make it age appropriate, which is what you're just talking about. You said, Larry had this thing, where he kind of made the foreword easy and accessible. So what you do is you make it accessible, and you know what? Guess what? That's what Jesus did. He made God accessible to us. So that's perfectly in line with your answer book.
Right, and the kids ask questions. Another thing we did was we didn't spend time speculating, and we would. Because they were facilitating the group, they knew they could ask questions. But we did a lot of reading because the Urantia book really, kind of speaks for itself. So you didn't really feel like we weren't really teaching them, We were reading the book. And as questions come up, we'd try and answer them. But sometimes the other kids would answer them. And we really tried to keep it more child-centered.
See, what you're doing here is what you're showing here is the validity of different approaches. Because Jennifer Siegel had the exact opposite approach. So we don't do that much reading. She said, we might spend an hour, they were only reading the Jesus papers, Jennifer would say to the kids, well, how would you feel if you were that apostle or whatever? But what you're telling me is you spent more time reading, and I think each approach is valid. There's not a one-size-fits-all approach here.
That's right. And, it really depends on the kid. And the level of interest and, I don't know. We had charts and we'd also do gatherings to make it fun, have little parties and stuff like that too and try and, we also had celebrated when you're talking about rituals too that we used to on Easter. We'd go out and we'd have your little quotes from the book and little we'd pick a grab bag of a quote that was typed up, and then we'd go off two by two, and each one would share their quote, and they would just talk about those quotes.
Oh, wonderful.
And that's something that you can do for any age, and kids love that for some reason. In fact, one time I used to put them in balloons, so the kids would they'd have a big room of balloons, and they'd have to pop the balloon to get, and then they'd read their quote to the other kids. Or someone else would read it for them if they were too little. But even little kids love that.
Oh, that's wonderful. We have another caller coming in. So let's see who it is and what questions they might have or comments. Hello, 321, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, this is Michael Zare.
Hi, Michael, how are you?
Good, good. How are you doing?
Doing wonderful.
I've been enjoying listening to everybody's comments and perspectives on it. I was calling in because I was introduced to the Urantia book as a child because my parents started reading. And actually, this is, an interesting story. My parents were doctor missionaries in Africa, in Ghana, and they were actually introduced to the book by Christy Lynn's parents.
Wow.
They really felt they weren't actually planning on going to Ghana. They were planning on going to Puerto Rico, and were praying for growth. And all of a sudden, everything changed in their lives, and they ended up in Ghana, and they find the Urantia book there. So I think it's really interesting the way You know, God can reach you wherever you are in the world. And they think in some ways maybe they needed to be away from what they were familiar with and their upbringing and a little farther away from their relatives to have a period of time where they could kind of make their own decision about the Urantia book. And had they found it while they were in the U.S. or in the U.S. territory, you know, that maybe they would not have been as open to it because of they would have had other influences in their lives at the time.
Interesting. Well, one of our favorite stories is about how my parents ran into Mike's parents at one of the first conferences. And my parents asked them, "Oh my gosh, what are you doing here? How did you hear about this book?" And they said, "Well, you gave it to us." And they hadn't realized that it had taken it, you know, because, of course, they were so used to having people not respond favorably to the book. And then I loved I think it was your mother who said they were on the plane on the way leaving Ghana with the big blue book on their lap, and they realized, oh, my gosh, this must be that blue book we were warned about from the Dr. Beek before we went to Ghana. But how did your folks introduce you guys as kids?
Well, it was when my sister's 1 year older than I am, and it was when, as near as we can remember, we were probably 9 and 10 at the time, and my parents had gone to a conference at Kendall College, I think is where they said the conference had been. We had stayed with some relatives near my grandmother's house. And after picking us up and, you know, on the way back from that conference, it was about a four-hour drive on the way back. And it's that I actually don't remember that drive, but my parents say my sister and I talked with them about religion and spirituality and God for the entire 4 hours. You know, we started by asking kind of what had they done at the conference, and they told us in kind of, you know, maybe general or generic terms, they in no way tried to say, you know, here's this book, read it. You know, they just said, well, it was a conference about God, and they were studying it. And we just started asking questions. And so they could tell from our questions that we obviously wanted to learn more. We were ready to learn more. And shortly after that, we started our own study group. It was just the four of us at that time. And every Sunday, we would read, you know, 45 minutes to an hour, depending on the paper we were reading. We started with the Jesus papers. We may have started with the first paper or the last paper of Section 3, which I think kind of is a preface to the Jesus papers. But we started there, and then we read the four sections kind of in reverse order, Section 4, Section 3, and so on. You know, I guess it took a number of years for us to do that. I don't remember how far we got in that format as the four of us, because by the time we were getting into sections 1 and 2, my sister and I were spending time reading just on our own as well.
Right.
But, you know, I think the key was that they waited until we were asking the questions, and it was clear that we had the interest and we were eager. I think someone else mentioned earlier, you know, it's not a, you know, this is Sunday, you got to go to church and sort of force it on people. There was nothing like that at all. We were eager to do it.
Well, I know that with my little niece and nephew, and with Reagan when she was little, and we just assume that children believe in God and have a rich inner life that includes lots of room for spiritual contact. And, you know, we always said prayers before we went to bed, or we would say grace at dinner. And because we grew up in a missionary community and in a culture where God noticed, you know, like, God was just really recognized everywhere. They had, like, banners and posters and
roadside billboards praising God everywhere in Africa. And so it just was a much less secular society than we experience here. And so I didn't know, I mean, all of the kids that I knew, whenever we got talking about religious issues, I don't remember us ever doubting the existence of God. And that conversation never occurred until maybe I was in high school or college before we started getting really philosophical.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're talking a little bit about what the appeal of the Urantia book is to children. And I think the big thing that was a difference for me was the just complete lack of fear that,
yeah,
you know, there is no way, never any teaching about being afraid of God. You know, it wasn't a matter of you had to do these things exactly right, and if you didn't, boy, were you in trouble. You know, we were taught it was a loving relationship from the very beginning, and that was just extremely attractive. And in fact, when my sister and I were probably like 11 and 12 or 12 and 13, we were invited by some neighbor children to go to a summer Bible study for a week. And we went, and the first day they were talking about the devil and temptation and fire, and we came back scared to death.
I don't mean to laugh, but
I think I had nightmares for a week. I was because this whole idea, and you know, needless to say, we didn't go back for any more of that study group. But you know, that's the one thing I've really tried to exhibit to my son. And he's 9, and we don't read the Urantia book together. I don't think he's ready for it yet. Mm. He asks me questions about God on occasion, and I'm always willing to talk to him. And not with doctrine or dogma, but with I always tell him what I believe. Sometimes I'll tell him additional beliefs. I say I believe, some people believe this, I believe this. But you know, the one main thing I'm trying to teach him at this point is not to be afraid of God. God is always there. He loves you. You can always talk to him. He wants you to be happy. He has a loving relationship with you. And I figure if I get that into him, really instilled, so he completely believes it, it doesn't matter what he pursues afterwards, whether he becomes a Hindu or a Buddhist or studies the Urantia book, as long as he has a loving relationship with his father.
I agree with you, because you know what? I agree with you 100%, Michael. I really do, because you know what? I think that this whole idea of fear of God really screwed me up. It really got me into a place where I just don't think it's necessary to even talk about that at all. I mean, I know some Christians in particular say, oh, well, we don't really mean fear, we mean reverence. But why even bother even using that word? There's no reason to talk about fear at all. I mean, the Urantia book says that Jesus quotes the Old Testament where it says the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. But I think what that means is that in early evolutionary religion, when religion was in a primitive state, that's all people were capable of was fear, because they were afraid of nature. And so they assumed that, God was in nature, and so they didn't know what caused thunderstorms and earthquakes and stuff, so their natural response was fear. But, I hope to God that we can get beyond that. I mean, I don't see any reason to talk about fear of the Lord at all to children.
Yeah, and Jesus had that a beautiful message he gave to his apostles once, I think near the end of his public ministry, where he was telling them, why do you continue to view God through the viewpoint of your ancestors? He said, it's natural for a child to be afraid of their parent when it comes to doing right and wrong. But as we grow older, we learn to love our parents, and we do things for them out of love for them. And he's saying so it is with, people and God, that are the forefathers were afraid because they didn't understand our Heavenly Father as much.
We have another caller on the line, and we're getting short on time. So, oh, great. They just dropped
off.
Yeah,
no, let me,
we've
I'll,
had
thanks for taking my call.
303 and 720. They've both been waiting, and they've dropped off the air. So please feel free to call back.
Yeah, I wonder if Michelle is one of those. Joan Mullins, are you still with us?
I'm sure Michelle was one because both 720 and 303 are
Colorado,
range areas. So,
are you still with us, Joan? Is Joan still with us?
Joan dropped off,
okay.
And so did Michael just drop off. I also dropped off the air for a while. I just my phone just cut out. So, but Reagan is still with us. Right, Reagan?
Yes, I am.
Well, we have only 15 minutes left on the show, so anyone else who wants to call in, please do so. Michelle, we'd love to hear from you. And Michael, feel free to call back. We're not taking up, our lines are still open, so feel free to call back in. Reagan, do you have anything else you'd like to add about your feelings about being introduced to the book as a kid?
Well, I have something to add about the whole fear thing. It's that I don't think that you should be raised to believe that God is a fear thing because, like, I remember when I was growing up, my grandfather was always he was always telling me if I didn't do this, I would end up doing this, and I would always be scared of him. I'd never want to go see him because he'd always punish me. But then on the other end, like, my grandmother would always say, hey, if you do this, I'll give you, like, a cookie or something like that, and it's always, like, I was always really welcoming to her, and I don't think that people should believe that you should always be fearful of something that you shouldn't at all, not at all.
Right. We have another caller. Hold on. 562, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Crystal Norman again.
Hey, Norman.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, yes, I remember your folks being in Ghana, and we met Prince John Baydu. Did you ever get to meet John Baydu?
Right, I did.
Oh, fantastic. And so, yes, your folks were truly missionaries, and your whole family is. So anyhow, just wanted to say, you used to talk about countries that we visited. It was like Mexico, Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, Nicaragua, Costa Rica, Panama, Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, Bolivia, Chile, Argentina, Uruguay, Paraguay, and Brazil. And then 14 countries of Asia, Jakarta, Hong Kong, Seoul, Tokyo, Manila, Sri Lanka, Kuala Lumpur. We out in the east. There we gave author C. Clarke a book for his 80th birthday. And we're on our way to do this, and the fellowship said, oh, we have books in Singapore. Could you pick those up for us, which we did, and our books were already there waiting for us. So it's just marvelous how it worked out. And then after that, we went to Africa, Morocco, Mauritania, Senegal, Gambia, Guinea, Ghana, Togo, Benin, Nigeria, Cameroon, and Gabon in South Africa, the western coast of Africa, and then a year off and back to Johannesburg for Botswana, Mozambique, Madagascar, St. Marie Island, Zanzibar, Tanzania, Kenya, Ethiopia, Saudi Arabia, and Egypt. And that was the tour. So far. And then young proteges are taking on the course, like Pradana and John and others, many, many others, and I think progress is being made. So,
anyhow. Well, I know Mark Bloomfield has gone all over Asia,
right,
and Africa and much of the world, and has been really a tremendous evangel of the book.
That's very true. That's very true. And I wonder what he pays for books. I still get charged for books, and I bet I was wondering how I get charged for books, and I could use a few more cases of them myself. But anyhow, good seeing everybody getting on board and a lot getting done. That's the main thing.
Well, thank you.
God bless you.
Well, the topic today, we only have about 10 minutes left on the show. The topic today is introducing the Urantia book to children. So if anyone has any comments or questions about that, feel free to call in. I do have a comment from one of the members of Facebook who wrote to me about how they raised their children and how they introduced the Urantia book to their kids. And she said that one of the things that they did was they began with they began having family meetings when their kids were really young. And they modeled those meetings from Marvin Galran's book on family meetings. And their meetings were always fun, developmentally appropriate for different ages, and the Urantia book was always present and read from. Other exciting things linked with the Urantia book at these meetings were food, teamwork, travel, games, art, activities, song, lots of laughter, different people taking turns, having some kind of agenda, and having a lot of fun. She said, we traveled a lot back then, so they also experienced children and teen groups at Urantia book conferences. And I wanted to comment on that because that was where our family did most of our philosophical chatting. Also, was during long car rides. It took a long time to get anywhere in Africa, as Norman may recall. And so we spent a lot of time in the car, and that was one of the ways we entertained ourselves while we were traveling. I'm sure Mike experienced the same thing, Michael, there when he called in, about how they talked about a Urantia conference with their parents on the way home. So, Andre, are you still there?
Oh, I'm still here. I'm just listening.
I think we finally have Michelle calling in. Hold on just a second. Let me see if that's her. 720, you're on the air.
Hi there. This isn't Michelle. It's Claire Thurston. How are you?
Oh, hi, Claire.
Hi.
Thank you so much for calling in.
Well, I tried earlier, but there were some technical glitches, but I know you only have a few more minutes.
Well, please share with us whatever you have to say.
Okay. There's a little... Okay, I'm hearing a lag on the...
You need to turn off the sound of your computer.
Okay, I did. All right. Well, I just wanted to say one short thing, which is all of these, however you live the Urantia book, has, you know, they say that your loyalties are the things that kids pay the most attention to. And I think that the thing I'm most proud of is the fact that all three of my kids now, who are 18, 20, and 24, identify themselves as Urantians. And, even the oldest, Angie, she now has a serious boyfriend, and part of their discussion is what kind of religion they're going to have in their life, and Angie's religion is being a Urantian. So I just, you know, ultimately, that's the goal of creating a culture that will go forward into many generations. And I think just showing the effort of doing a study group or taking the time to talk to the kids about spiritual things, just letting them be heard, has such a profound impact. And just in general, the golden rule of treating kids the way you would have liked to have been treated as a kid.
Yeah, that's
absolutely.
That's really important. Claire, this is Andre. You and I met like 10 years ago. And I wanted to, I remember you did some great workshops on gender and some other really interesting things. I wanted to ask you, Claire, what did you do? I don't want to have too much time left, but what did you do to introduce the book? Did you do anything structured or formal to introduce the book to your kids, or did you just kind of, they just became naturally curious, or how did it happen?
Well, we actually did the family meetings every week where we'd pick a quote and Chuck would make something beautiful like a saying, you know, because he's a graphic artist. And then we would discuss that. And we had a very simple family meeting and any issues in the family were brought up at that time. But then we had Fruits of the Spirit where we had some goodies at the end of the meal. And
awesome.
We had, Yeah, we had a little funny ritual where we had a like a chalice and candles and so anyway, we talked about it a lot, but we during, you know, regular times, but we did have that Sunday ritual of just having after dinner. And, you know, having the identity, saying that we were Urantians, I think is fairly uncommon. I mean, I think it's something that should happen more.
I agree, although I also don't think there's anything wrong with people, and I've talked about this before, a lot of people have been saying, you know, my kids are going to be Urantia book readers or Urantians. The only thing that I sit there and worry, I have to tell you, there's a part of me, though, that says, what's going to happen to Judaism? What's going to happen to Islam? What's going to happen to Christianity? What's going to happen to all these? And I think that you're going to have people who are going to identify themselves as Urantians. But I think the other thing that hopefully will happen is that these other religions will continue to exist, but will integrate the Urantia book into their existing framework.
Right. Right. And, you know, but it is, I think, important to, I mean, just more in terms of loyalty, because I've heard other stories in your show today of how confusing the loyalties were with spiritual messages that didn't resonate. And I think it's important that kids feel that their parents are protecting their spiritual lives in a way. That, you know, that's super important, that they don't, that they understand that the impact of a negative spiritual message can be devastating.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
And I think not only is it devastating to kids, but it really impacts them for the rest of their life. I mean, one of the things that Jesus said when he was talking to John Mark was that he was really fortunate that his parents had raised him in a loving but wise family, and that the formative years of your life will affect you for the rest of your eternal adventure. So
right.
I think it is really important to give them the really positive Urantia book perspectives. I mean, they can choose whatever path to God they want, but having a foundation based on a more Jesusonian God concept is pretty critical.
And, you know, kids turn, I mean, a lot of times it's such a magnet to their friends, too. Their friends don't even know why they want to be with your kids, but a lot of times they're sending out the spiritual messages, not necessarily in any doctrine, you know,
right,
the way they are. And we'll turn to them, especially this has been true in our family, of other kids turning to our kids for spiritual guidance during difficulties. So it's not like a, you know, a Urantia evangelism, but they become a spiritual resource, I guess, I would say.
Right.
To their community of friends.
That was definitely true for us. I had one friend who's now a Urantia book reader who said we were almost like magnets, like social magnets, because we really had a very strong sense of fellowship and the brotherhood of man, not only the fatherhood of God, but the brotherhood of man, which sort of permeated our family culture. So our house was the house where everybody wanted to hang out.
Yeah. And, you know, eventually that develops, you know, through more relationships and, you know, as you say, it affects the rest of their life, but their friends always will remember it too.
Now, we only have 2 minutes left on the show. So I need to thank you so much, Claire, for calling
in.
Oh,
you bet.
And Michael and Reagan, thank you especially for staying on as long as you did. Thank you to Joan Evans, and a very special thank you to Jennifer Siegel for being our guest speaker for the first hour of the show. And Norman, your comments and efforts and work on all of our behalf are always so appreciated. And thank you all the people who were on our chat line today, and I apologize for not being very actively chatting with you, but I'm on a cell phone, so it was very difficult for me to type and be on air at the same time.
Aloha to everyone.
Aloha.
Thanks, Tislin.
And thank you, Andre, for starting this wonderful program. And
this has
for
been a great show.
Me.
I really appreciate it. Thank you for lining up all these people.
Well, and thank you for asking me to co-host today. It was a pleasure.
Well, you'll be doing it for the next 2 weeks. So we'll be and next week we're going to try to get Tom Chiquette on. We're going to continue this kind of discussion. He has a little bit of a different approach, but it's just as interesting and just as stimulating. So we'll be talking to him next week.
So thanks again, everyone, and again, thank you, Andre, for giving me an opportunity to choose the topic and the speaker.
Thank you.
Bye, Reagan. Thanks
bye.
Again.
Bye.
Goodbye, bye. Reagan.
And I hope everyone has a wonderful week, and we'll see you next week.
Yes, we will. God bless everybody. Thanks.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.